morning, commissioners, county manager. I'm Don Benton, director of the Department of Environmental Services. We're here this morning to brief the board on two very important restoration projects on the Lower East Fork of the Lewis River. As you know, our Legacy Lands Department manages all of our legacy lands. We have many partnerships that we are involved with, not the least of which are two partnerships that we're going to be talking about here today, one with PUD and one with the Lower Columbia Estuary Partnership. These two organizations are proposing some restoration projects on the East Fork of the Lewis River, the value and cost of which is almost $3 million. The county will not spend any money on these projects, but we own the property. And as commissioners or counselors, we're looking to you for your direction and your permission as the property owners to allow us to move forward with these restoration projects. We'll get into the details of each of those. The manager of my Legacy Lands Department is Pat Lee, and Pat has been working on these projects and shepherding them through the process to this point. And so he is here now this morning to share with you a few more of the details, and then we'll introduce the partners, and they'll be able to make a presentation. One of our partners is sick this morning, so Pat will be pitch hitting for Jeff at PUD, but he'll give you a quick overview, and then we'll get into the actual details of each of the projects. Pat?
Okay, brief overview. All these properties are on the Lower East Fork Lewis River between Paradise State Park, Paradise Point State Park, and really the county operations yard out off of Daybreak Road. There's actually, in terms of grant submittals, there are three projects, two by the Lower Columbia Estuary Partnership, one soliciting funding through the Salmon Recovery Funding Board, and one with funding from Bonneville Power Administration. And the Clark Public Utilities project is on McCormick Creek, and that is a proposal for grant funding through the Salmon Recovery Funding Board. Because we are the property owner, in order to secure funding, we need to authorize these projects to move forward. If funding is successfully awarded to these projects, we will actually have to enter into a formal intergovernmental agreement on down the road. In terms of timing, the Bonneville Power Administration probably can move a little faster than the Salmon Recovery Funding Board. And as I understand it, funding is mostly secured for one of the Lower Columbia Estuary Partnership projects. The Salmon Recovery Funding Board decisions will not be made until December of this year. So conceivably, one of the projects could commence construction this summer if funding comes along quickly, and it's likely that the other projects would not start until next year after the sponsors execute grant agreements with the Salmon Recovery Funding Board. With that, I would like to introduce Marshall Johnson of Lower Columbia Estuary Partnership, who's the principal restoration ecologist there, who's going to review the LSEP proposals.
Are you going to speak from up here?
If that works, I can do either.
Just in terms of advancing the slides, we're having trouble with the wireless mouse.
And make sure you speak into that thing too.
Got it. All set? Okay. Thanks for inviting us here to talk to you about habitat restoration on the East Fork Lewis River. Lower Columbia Estuary Partnership is a nonprofit organization. We're focused on water quality and habitat protection of the Lower Columbia River, that being from Bonneville Dam out to the ocean, but it also includes the tidally influenced portions of the tributaries, including the East Fork Lewis River. Because the Estuary Partnership and the county have overlapping goals when it comes to habitat restoration and also important species protection, And because the East Fork Lewis River is a high priority for populations of salmon and steelhead that use that river, we formed a partnership to take a look at the East Fork Lewis properties for opportunities to do habitat restoration. So we've come up with a handful, several possible actions that we'd like to show to you today. On this map, to get you oriented, obviously the Columbia River flowing out to the ocean, the Lewis River flowing into the Columbia, the mouth coming out at the lower end of Sauvie Island at Warrior Rock. And then this blue outline that you see here is the East Fork Lewis River. It flows down past the town of Lost Center to meet up with the Lewis River here. So as you know, the county owns a great deal of high-quality wetland habitats on the floodplains of the East Fork Lewis River. we're looking at two large wetlands. They're outlined in red here for potential projects to benefit habitat. Part of the reason we're looking at these two in particular is because in the last 10 years there's been monitoring at these sites that have found significant numbers of juvenile salmon and steelhead species utilizing these wetlands for high flow refuge and rearing habitat, meaning when there's really big floods in the East Fork Lewis River, the juvenile salmon need to get out of those flows and they escape up into these wetlands. They also go into the wetlands and spend time there eating basically bugs and insect larvae to grow strong and large so they can survive their migratory journey out to the ocean. So these are important parts of the life stages of these species. So real quick, I'm going to run through project goals that we use when we're looking for projects. In this case, number one goal, looking at addressing limiting factors that have already been identified in the East Fork Lewis River habitat restoration plans. There have been two, 2009 and 2014. These were created for and for use by Lower Columbia Fish Recovery Board, and specifically calling out this 50% approximately reduction or loss of off-channel habitat in the Lower East Fork Lewis River. Off-channel habitat, one of the main types of off-channel habitat are these types of floodplain wetlands and the channels that connect them and the ways that the river is able to access these when there's a flood. Also, reestablish valuable juvenile salmon rearing in adult spawning and holding areas, increasing the likelihood of the success of other projects that are going on regionally to try to help these populations. When you're trying to help a population, you need to look at a lot of different things in a larger area. So, for example, there are other restoration efforts, including at Mason Creek, which is within the reach of the river that we're looking at, McCormick Creek, which we'll hear about a little bit later today, and also things like chum reintroduction along the Lewis River. And then finally, last but not least, is supporting Clark County in efforts to protect and preserve public space and greenways. So now I'd like to run through the actions, the proposed actions. I'm going to start at the downstream end near the town of Lost Center and move upstream. Again, we're looking at these areas that are outlined in red. So in this slide, zooming in, this is the town of Lost Center down in the corner. This is the bridge that crosses the East Fork Lewis River. And this first large wetland area currently has only one connection channel that connects it to the river. It's this blue outline here. The channel currently is an engineered channel. It's basically a ditch, very poor habitat quality, and somewhat limited connectivity between the river and this wetland. All the water has to go in and out that one location. It also, at this yellow box, there's a weir that's been put in a while ago that is not currently being managed to allow passage in and out. In other words, it's left closed essentially throughout the year. Problem with that is during the season when juvenile salmon are trying to get into the site to benefit from it, they're partially blocked by that weir. In fact, most flows are blocked by that weir from getting in. And then the other problem is if there is a flood big enough to push them up over that weir, when the flood recedes, they tend to get trapped in the wetland. If it's in the summertime, when the water goes lower, they'll probably die because the temperatures of the water will get too high for them to survive. So we're losing some of these species for that reason. So the way we'd like to address those problems or resolve those problems would be, one, to enhance the conditions in this channel. And the way we would do that is by adding curves or meanders to the channel and putting in large wood logs into the channel that would provide cover and habitat structural diversity, things that fish, you know, typically need and use for various reasons. And then also addressing the weir by replacing it with something that's more of a free-flowing, natural sort of stream channel that makes ensures that there's no that their passage both in and out would not be inhibited. The other opportunity we're looking at to improve conditions here are at these yellow stars. We're looking at those as locations for new connections from between the river and the floodplain. The more connections we have to allow the river to access its floodplain and fish to access the wetlands, the better. So at these locations, new connection channels could be added, and we're looking at anywhere that we do that, we would add a trail bridge, just like the one that's here on this existing channel, to make sure that we preserve the recreational use of the site. It's a very popular recreational trail right now, both for hikers and equestrian use, so we would ensure that the bridges have the capacity for both that and any service vehicles that needed to get in there. Moving along, upstream, slightly upstream and across the river to this large wetland area, really nice habitat existing in here, but it has access issues. Again, there, this blue line is the is an existing slough channel between the wetland and the river. At the yellow dot, there's an old culvert that needs to be replaced, so we're looking at replacing that with a bridge. That would be a channel-spanning bridge to make sure that we're not inhibiting either hydrologic regimes or salmon access in and out. Also at this site, looking at this existing channel that goes almost all the way out to the river as another opportunity to get a connection where we could have a connection channel go through, and then, you know, certain flows there would be a flow through, but certainly we would improve access and the hydrologic regime between the river and this wetland. Moving upriver again, this is the site we call the side channel site because it has two relic side channels. One of them is here, and then there's another one right here. We call them side channel A and side channel B. Now, these were created by the river originally flowing in that path historically, and then at some point the river moved over, changed its path, but it left behind these sort of semicircular side channels that are great habitat for all kinds of species if they're well connected and if there's high quality habitat in there. In this case, side channel A is somewhat perched at the mouth, and so it's disconnected at most flows, so we're looking at an opportunity to excavate that down and make and improve the connection. Side channel B is already well connected but has poor habitat quality. And so to enhance habitat, we're looking at, again, adding logs for large wood habitat structure in these channels, and then also along the main stem downstream for about half a mile, we're looking at opportunities to put in additional large wood log habitat structures there. And then finally, looking for any opportunity we can to improve riparian forest and wetland forest habitat on these sites, continuing the work that the county has done some great work along this riparian zone along the main stem already, and we'd like to improve or expand on that wherever we can. So we'll be looking at adding controlling non-native invasive weeds that dominate a lot of these areas and replacing them with trees and shrubs that would provide habitat benefits for multiple species, but certainly for salmon. Final slide. This is just a shot, a photograph of one of the connection channels. This is the lower one, just to show you what they look like. It's fairly degraded habitat or lack of habitat. As you can see, it's straightened. There are steep eroding banks. There's no structural diversity in the channel. fairly poor water quality, and then you have non-native invasive reed canary grass growing all over the place and preventing the restoration or regeneration of any native trees and shrubs. So in this sketch over on the side, just showing an example of how you would add structural diversity by putting these logs with root wads into the stream. On the bottom one, what it's showing you is that these help create sort of a pool riffle system within the stream. These are sort of habitat conditions that salmon need for use of these areas. And then also, there are a few past plantings by the county hanging on in the back of this picture. Those are mostly willows, but certainly the reed canary grass is an issue here. So we'd be looking at getting control on that reed canary grass and replacing it with more native trees and shrubs as much as possible in an effort to maximize habitat benefits. And that's all I have, but I'm happy to answer any questions or back up and look at this.
I have just one, and that is, and I asked Pat, and I want you to clarify for me, and that is, on the main channel, you talked about a little bit up from this, where you're going to actually place some root wells in the main channel.
Mm-hmm. Yes.
We don't allow any motorized boats in this section of the East Fork, but we do. There is a lot of recreational boating, canoeing, kayaking, and so on. They anticipate that the root wads of the logs that we're placing in the stream will in any way inhibit or affect the recreational use of the stream.
We don't, and that's certainly a significant issue, and we both address it by choice and because we're required to. When you're down below essentially the ordinary high water, you're actually on Department of Natural Resource aquatic lands, and so we have to get permission to do that work there as well. And as part of that, they require us to do a boater or safety checklist, and so that's part of the review to make sure whatever we're designing and proposing to put in there is something that meets standards for safety, particularly for boaters. Also, no, I don't. And the other reason is these structures are designed to be habitat structures that are pretty tight on the bank. They're not. Sometimes you see large wood habitat structures that are giant, enormous constructions out in the middle. We're not doing anything like that. These are just right along tight against the bank.
You mentioned the canary grass being an invasive species. How do you get rid of it? How do you plant trees and those kind of things? Does the shade naturally after a while cause it to diminish?
You can shade it out somewhat, but I think getting rid of it is probably not a viable goal. Instead, we look at how can we improve the habitat conditions there by replacing it with something else. So if we can get plants established, there may still be reed canary grass underneath those trees and shrubs, but at least now we have a structural diversity that birds can benefit from that's going to shade the creek. So it's a tough one to deal with. A lot of people struggled against it for a long time. I have myself, certainly.
Seems like a losing battle. So basically you're not trying to subtract it out. You're trying to add other stuff to compete with it.
Correct.
Okay.
Yes?
On the site 43, you talked about adding footbridges where you can place the channels to keep the pedestrian access we have there. The county also has plans to go through site 43B with a future pedestrian mm-hmm. trail. Is that incorporated in your plans to improve or leave after you're done a trail in that area for pedestrian use?
Yeah, absolutely. Everything we're doing is we're checking to make sure that we're not eliminating any kind of access routes. Right now, the road comes down from this farm through the forest and a steep road, and then that's what the culvert is there for, is an access road. So the reason we're putting a bridge in there is to make sure we maintain that route. And then it's somewhat of a road, but turns into more of a trail, I think, as you get through here. And we're also going to make sure that we maintain the connection at this point by having a way to get around, and there'll be a crossing of any channel that's in the way.
But you will be developing some temporary construction access roads that might be easily transformed, shall we say, into a trail.
Absolutely. I think you know, we all we need to do is think about sort of our planting plan, where we're putting the trees and shrubs, and then we make sure we coordinate that with any, you know, maintaining any of those access routes. It's just sort of ongoing, you know, non-surfaced but usable trails. I think would be really useful and enjoyable for people to get down in there and really see the habitat.
And you referred both of these sites as 43 and 43B. You must have a list. And this is serially.
Yes. That comes from these habitat restoration plans. And they had hydrologists and fish biologists look at the East Fork Lewis River as a basin. And they did a lot of analysis of it. And then at the end, they had this long list of proposed restoration actions. And these are some of those actions, some of the highest priority ones. That's why we've started out by targeting those.
And what is the cost for what's proposed here on this particular 43 and 43B?
Together, 43 and 43B is in the neighborhood of $1.8 to $2 million for the project cost. Now, the side channel site is, as Pat mentioned, there's sort of two projects. One is 43B, and the side channel site is another project, and that one is more in the $500,000 range.
And there are two sources of funding for this. One, we have hopes of getting that approved by December of this year. And is that another one, or is that this?
Bonneville Power BPA funding is for 43B, and then LCFRB is the one that we're waiting for a decision later this year, and that's from Surf Board.
So the timing for this particular one, what would we prefer, envisioned?
43 and 43B could go forward this year if it's approved. We're in the middle of permitting right now. It's hard to say if we can get through all the permitting time to do it this year or not, but the funding is essentially available to build it if we can get the permits.
So we need to be able to get the green light in a timely way so that you can do a lot of this work during the summer, ideally.
True.
Super long.
We're looking at late summer, early fall, probably September, October, so it's coming along for sure, but it's not critical at this moment. We have a lot of other permitting we have to get through before we know if we can really do it or not this year.
Yeah, as soon as the project is ready to go, we would put together the agreement with Lower Columbia Estuary Partnership that would allow the construction to go forward. In those, you'd have provisions and identifying the county liability insurance requirements, et cetera, so that the county's interests are protected.
So certainly there's a process to follow to make sure, because it's county property, we'd be able to make sure it's authorized. Is there a downside? Why in the world would we possibly say no?
Personally, I don't think the downsize. I mean, there's a downside to it. It's an opportunity that we've kind of been developing over the last several years, particularly with BPA requirements to mitigate for the impact of the Lower Columbia dams. That is why they are focusing in on the tidal areas, because that is within the purview of BPA funding.
Great. Okay.
Thank you.
Sounds very, very good. Looks like you guys have done your homework. You've got plenty of experience that you've done projects like this in the past. Mm-hmm. You're the right choice to be able to get it done. So you just need our support.
That'd be great. Thank you.
Great.
One last question.
Sure.
And through the permitting, are you utilizing the JARPA process to expedite the permitting, which is specifically for nonprofits to do, you know, restoration?
We are. The permitting is complex for a project like this. We're definitely using JARPA. Kevin has been invaluable in helping us navigate all of the permitting process with the county, but also working with WDFW and getting help in streamlining where it's appropriate. So it's been going pretty well.
You're working with the right guy. Kevin knows all the hoops.
I've been getting that impression too, yeah.
Very good.
Great, thanks a lot.
Thank you.
And our next presentation then is the McCormick Creek Restoration Project, which is undertaken by the PUD. And Jeff, who knows all about this, very ill this morning, called, really, really disappointed that he couldn't be here, but he asked Pat to fill in for him, and Pat knows the details of the project, and we've got a PowerPoint on that one as well.
To proceed on this, we just simply need consensus in a work session here. It doesn't have to go to consent.
Okay. No, I believe that really the formal approval document would be the intergovernmental agreement, but before we got to that stage, we thought it would be important to at least give you an idea of what is going to be addressed in that agreement. Okay. Again, I'm trying to ad lib for Jeff at Clark Public Utilities, who's been a good partner. We've worked with him on many projects before. And McCormick Creek, just to orient you, let's see. Basically, there is I-5, Paradise Point State Park. This is the McCormick Creek area. And then you have the center road over here. The project site is actually focusing on McCormick Creek. In many ways, it has similarities to the side channel project that was just previewed by the Lower Columbia Estuary Partnership. McCormick Creek itself is identified as a very important creek in the salmon recovery plan. In terms of the assessment for a Tier 2 stream, it was considered most important. And it's Tier 2 primarily because it is in the tidal area, more so than any other reason. It is important to all life stages of coho. Steelhead, the upper reaches, could be used for spawning and rearing. And Chinook juvenile usage is probably the key in this area. And chum, the Department of Fish and Wildlife is trying to reintroduce chum along the East Fork Lewis River. It was once probably our most abundant salmon species and now is almost non-existent within the East Fork system. So that is an important goal as well. We're trying to create riparian and floodplain plant communities, in-stream habitat, improve floodplain function, and improve water quality impairments impacting salmon and other species. We're actually going to, in the McCormick Creek area, we're going to be focusing on about 16 acres where we're going to be a very high density revegetation project. In addition, there is going to be some work on the in-stream where, again, like the graphics that you saw on the side channel project, you have these incised channels, not very diverse habitat, and so we will be looking to grade back the banks, which would improve the opportunities to both support the planting that we hope to do right along the creek, which would help cool the water, as well as provide a more diverse habitat. There will also be some development of backwater habitat through some of these alcoves where you have a little pool, deeper water, and you would use the wood structures, habitat cover, both to attract food sources and probably more importantly to reduce predation so that the young rearing salmon have a place to hide when the flows are very high and they can get out of the main stem, and two, from the predators that would certainly enjoy a salmon meal like many of us. And that is basically the thrust of this particular project. Again, Jeff is far more versed in it than I am, but I'll try and answer any questions that I can.
What's the cost of this project?
This one, I believe, is about, I want to say $550,000. $100,000.
Our public utilities is funding this out of what are they?
They are
their source.
Yes, their source is they look at the Salmon Recovery Funding Board for probably about 85% of the funding. They have their other resources that would cover about 15% of the funding. And again, that decision on funding through the SURF Board will be made in December.
Welcome, Tom. Those are the semis.
Any other questions? I know Peter had a question about the, again, we have the construction access, which will go down 24th Avenue. It does not touch those Pearson parcels that we've been discussing, and then it would work over to McCormick Creek. So again, it'll be temporary construction access. It will improve and provide an opportunity for us to sort of carve in beginning of a trail system in there, which does not exist at the moment, and it's pretty tough slogging through some of those fields at this point. So I think that will be an important recreational benefit for the community on our property as well.
And Tom, just to get you a quick summary, what we just
Thank you, Bill. I really appreciate it. I think it's one of those things that we want to do, we want to improve. One of the questions I had, why we weren't using one of the other easements that we already had in Crete, what is it on 24th Avenue?
We actually are. Huh? The access is going right down 24th Avenue until you get down to the gas pipeline, and then it will be carving through that lower field area over McCormick Creek.
All right, okay. I was looking at that the other day as to the repairing area that we was going to enhance.
Yes.
And
yes.
I was excited about that, but I wanted to access parking down below. So that's good.
Yes.
Job.
Okay. Thank you.
Sir, at this point, you want people to have consensus, a green light from us to proceed so that, because we own, the county owns the property. And in order for this to, for you guys to be able to obtain the grant funding to proceed, no local Clark County funds are going to be used, you need a head nod from us.
That is correct. That would be the desired outcome.
On here, there we go. As we stated when we started this morning, these two very important projects will do a number of things for our citizens and for our habitat, and they won't cost the county any money. And when it's over, we're going to have two terrific projects, but we're all going to have better access to these areas, because there's going to be some temporary roads that are built in that could be turned into trails later. So that's another big asset. Our two partners are well versed in these types of projects. We have a lot of experience in the county working with them in the past on other things. And so we feel very positive about it. And we will come forward with a formal, as Pat says, once we get the funding in place, we're ready to do a formal agreement. That will be the formal action from the board. But we're looking at a situation where we need at least two of you to say, yeah, we like it. Go ahead. Keep moving in that direction and bring us the agreement when you're ready to sign it. And that's what we're looking for here today.
Support both of these, and you have no reservations.
I have no reservation about either one of them. I've asked a lot of questions, and I'll tell you, we've gone over this and gone over this. And to answer your earlier question, why would anybody be against? I can't find a legitimate or solid reason that anyone could be opposed to these, because the benefits are enormous, and the county taxpayer will benefit, and it's not going to cost them to do these projects. And I think that's a big plus. We're blessed that we have partners that are able and capable of getting these kinds of grants and funding, and that they're willing to do these things on our properties. So we're very grateful for that partnership, and we hope to have more of them in the future.
So I have another question of concern. We have a parcel, we have a farm right there.
Correct.
Close to that area, an individual purchase of that. It was supposed to have been sold, and we have just now discovered that this won't interfere with the sale of that farm, will it?
I anticipated your question because I think I asked that question myself when I saw these maps, and the answer is absolutely no. It will not interfere with it at all. In fact, we're not even utilizing that property for access or easement or anything. So it'll be no effect on whatever the board decides to do in the future concerning the Pearson properties. Will have no effect on the success or going forward of this project.
Okay.
So Tom, do we have consensus to give the green light?
Absolutely. Good job, Pat.
Thank you.
Green light.
Counselor.
Thank you very much.
Too easy.
Thank you.
That wraps it. Thank you very much.
Great.
You did.